Welcome to The Independent Artist, sponsored by the National Association of Independent Artists, NAIA. I'm Douglas Sigworth. I'm a glassblower.
I'm Will Armstrong, mixed media artist. Join us as we explore the topics that affect the lives and livelihood of art show artists. Douglas, it's nice to see you again. Welcome back to the podcast. It's episode 3 now, and we've had so much good feedback from episode 1 and 2. It's exciting stuff, man. It's nice to see you.
This is great. I'm having a blast, and I've been getting calls and messages from folks, and it's really great to hear what people's reaction is to this. So, hey, I haven't seen you here in about a week and a half, couple weeks. What have you been up to?
I live in a resort community, my friend. It's Santa Fe, New Mexico, and as people are getting vaccinated, it is house guest central here.
Nice.
My parents came to visit at the same time my in-laws did, which is great because they get along. So that is not as maybe stressful as it sounds because they really get along well, and we can have some dinner and have a great conversation. But it has been a little stressful just with people coming and going. But it's been fun. It's been fun. Yeah. I'm ready to get back in the studio.
Well, you know, so we got vaccinated about 3 weeks ago. The second one is going to be here just in a couple of days. So what's been on my mind the past number of weeks is this is really happening. We're going to start seeing people again. We're going to start, you know, going back to shows. I'm already thinking about like what you're talking about, having people visit and planning events, and it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, it is. I'm jumping the gun probably a little bit. I have not had my second vaccination. I got the Moderna, and I read something online, a reputable source, but still online, saying that you were about 80-85% vaccinated after 2 weeks after one shot of Moderna. Mm. And that was better than the Johnson & Johnson, which is 65%. And I'm not saying we haven't been careful. We're still wearing masks and public, and New Mexico still has an outdoor mask mandate, so we're doing that, which seems a little like you're kind of going through the motions when you're waiting outside to get into a restaurant and you're wearing your mask with everyone, and then you get inside the restaurant and everybody's like, okay, well, now we're safe, and you take the mask.
It's like the old smoking section, you know, there's smoking, you know, one booth over, but that's the smoking section, and this is the non-smoking section.
That's right. This is the huffing your COVID on people section, and this is the not huffing your COVID. So, I don't know. It's ridiculous, but these are the motions we're going through, and New Mexico is pretty safe right now. We've got it down in Santa Fe to like 0.01. That is until the Texans invade and start coming on vacation. We'll see how that goes.
Well, you know, they did come out in the news a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, right around Easter, where they said, you know, fully vaccinated people, we don't need to be as worried about them being carriers. You know, we had our fully vaccinated daughter over, and we weren't as worried about being all masked up amongst our vaccinated relatives. So we were okay. So I think we can kind of loosen the grip a little bit. But yeah, out in public, we for sure need to stay masked and all that good stuff.
I mean, it is true. And I think a lot of times you're just kind of going through the motions for other people, you know, like, I don't want you to feel like I'm a threat to you. Even though I've been vaccinated, let's make you feel a little bit better about it walking down the street. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's the way we're doing. Even to the point here where I am, where you're on your bike and you're going down a huge hill and you're going about 25 miles an hour down a huge hill and you see somebody coming along next, like the other way also going, you know, and you're like, you both kind of pull on your mask. It's like, I don't know that that's helping anything, but, you know, it's the dance, you know, it's the dance we're going through right now.
Well, you know, speaking of biking, we're in Wisconsin, you know, we're just outside of Minneapolis, so our climate is a little bit different than what you're probably used to down in New Mexico. So a couple weeks ago, we had some 80-degree days, and we were out biking like crazy, climbing the hills, like, all right, spring, summer, it's here, you know. Then we got snow flurries, and it was down in the 40s and the 30s again for like a big stretch. So I don't know what this time of the year is always. We have no idea what's up or what's down or what to expect.
Right. Just imagine being out in a tent on the street. I miss it. I think I'd even welcome a storm in my craft hut, to be honest, at this point.
Knock on wood, knock on wood.
Yeah, but it's been good. We've been doing a lot of hiking. Actually ran into a baby mountain lion on the trail just recently with my daughters. We just kind of froze in our place, and we're looking ahead, and I'm like, is that a freaking mountain lion? And my daughter and I were watching it, and it just, it disappears on the trail. And I thought at first, I was like, maybe it was a bobcat, but it had the long tail, and then it turns back and looks at us. And I'm like, yeah, that's a big kitty. And I'm just looking around for mom, and I'm like,
that's the thing to be afraid of right there.
Yeah, we can't go any further on the trail. 2 seconds later, a biker just bust through, going through, and I'm like, this is kind of like a, you know, the speeder going through the speed trap. You know, like, well, I don't want to speed too fast, but we'll let this guy in front of us go ahead and get all the speeding tickets first. I'll go a little hair under what he's doing. And I'm like, well, he'll clear all the mountain lions. He'll be lunch if that's the case. And
that's right.
We told him, I yelled for, I was like, hey, mountain lion on the trail. And this was super close to the road, really close to the trailhead. I mean, we had just started, but we're still here.
Are you guys nervous to go back there again? Or are you going to still be a regular thing? What doesn't scare you off?
Nah, it doesn't scare me off. I mean, it is what it is. I think it was a real fluke. We got kind of lucky to even see something like that. I might carry some spray or something like that.
Yeah, there you go.
Pick up some rocks, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Something's going to get you. If it's going to be mountain lions, at least it'll be a good story.
Well, you know, this idea of being able to get back to life as normal, you know, I think of Winter Park. This will be the first show where I'm fully vaccinated. Mm. And my first thought is, this is great. Oh my God, I'm going to go back to a show and I love Winter Park. And well, then you kind of sit back a little bit and you go, okay, well, let's think about this like a business. Winter Park is always an excellent bookend to my Florida season. It's a good see you later, Florida, and move on to the next thing. And that's when it's in March. Now it's in May. And I'm coming 1,500 miles one way for one show. And as tempted as I am to come back and give everybody a big hug, all the other artists, I have to think this one through and see what's going to happen. How about you? You're in Winter Park, I believe.
Yeah, I'm in Winter Park too. The booth spaces just came out. I've got a killer space right there on the street.
Sweet.
I'm excited about that. But then again, like you're saying, the heat and then the street, we're talking 95 on pavement. It's going to be pretty hot. But you remember last week or the week before, I was talking about a burner show. I always like to pick up some kind of show just to let me remember how to talk to the humans. I'm nervous about that. It's been over a year since I've done a festival. I went ahead and picked up a show in Ridgeland, Mississippi. I applied for that one. Typically, it's the same weekend as Fort Worth or one of the big Texas shows or Dogwood in Atlanta. This time, there's nothing else going. It's Mississippi. H.C. Porter has always had her hand in that one. I'm not sure if she still juries or helps run it, but I've always had a lot of respect. Yeah, had a lot of respect for her and her work. So I don't know. I do well in the Deep South. I've done well at that River Arts show in Memphis. I always kind of joke. I'm like, if I can't, like, if you know my work, I do a lot of blues themes and roots music themes and travel and music. If I can't make money in Memphis, then I feel like nobody can.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take that to the test and see if
I can do it. That's your town.
It is. We'll see. And if I can make that, if I can parlay that into a good show in Ridgeland, we'll see if that happens. But I'll let you know.
Would that be a tie-in to Winter Park? I'm kind of lost in my timing and everything.
Yeah, kind of. What I'd probably do, it's actually in 2 weeks. So it's the first weekend in May. So I'd probably leave the truck. I mean, it gets me 1,000 miles closer. I'm like 2,200 miles to Winter Park. So it gets me 1,000 miles closer. So
I thought I was far away, man.
Yeah, I mean, New Mexico and Santa Fe, I should be hitting the Western swing kind of shows instead. I should be doing the outdoor art markets, but none of those are going on. We haven't gotten licenses here yet.
I'm so conflicted too, because it's not just about the bottom line, because, you know, I really value all the hard work and effort that, you know, Winter Park Volunteer Committee puts into the show. And I would just feel like a big heel committing to the show and then saying, I can't come because I'm not going to make enough money. But, you know, I mean, that is why we do this. We need to be able to support ourselves, especially after a year being off of shows.
Right. And it is next to impossible to cull together a schedule with so many shows being pre-juried versus, you know, what you can and cannot get into.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, I'll say, okay, here's my Florida season. Then, okay, here's my Texas kind of season. You know, everybody knows the big ones in June where you're like, okay, if I can get into you know, either Rittenhouse and then you move to Old Town and then you move to Lakefront, which is super close. Then you possibly do Des Moines into Cherry Creek. You know, you
that's the dream schedule right there.
It is, but, you know, I don't think most people can do all five or all four. But if you get into two or three, then you still feel like you've won something because you have. But this year it's like, well, Lakefront is not going. I can't remember if they postponed or if they rolled over again.
Yep, they've rolled over.
Yeah, Old Town, we're all keeping our fingers crossed that the city of Chicago issues them a permit. You know, the weekend before that is 57th there in Chicago. So you can't really put together a typical schedule anymore. You don't really know. I don't know. I could see somebody driving like me. I'm in Santa Fe and I'm thinking about going to Mississippi and then turning around possibly and then going back to Winter Park or flying home. It's just, I don't know. It's a mess, but it's a it's all... These are the card games you get accepted to. They let you sit down at the table and you got to play your hand.
I'm in the same boat. The time frame that I've been really challenged with is that August show run, because I typically will do like the Uptown here, which is a hometown show for us in Minneapolis. But I ultimately like to end up around Labor Day out somewhere on the West Coast. And so we have the Pearl, which has rolled over for us a couple of times. And they are currently still waiting till the first week of May to make their final decision as to, you know, what they're going to be able to do. And I think, like the Uptown, their issues are not fully around COVID. I think they've got economic issues and they've got, you know, some of the civil unrest that's been happening that they have to figure out how badly is that going to affect the show.
That's absolutely right. I mean, my wife is from Minneapolis and we have a little lake cabin up in Minnesota and we love that area. And we are watching the Chauvin trial with bated breath, just kind of saying, well, is the city going to burn again? You know?
Uptown is a place Renee and I would go at least every other week for date night. We would go to the Uptown Theater or the Lagoon Theater and take in independent films, the restaurants, everything. That area is like home to us. That's where we started dating 27 years ago. It's so disappointing. And I just got a message from my friend Jay McDougall, and he said, Calhoun Square, it's been sold. It's empty. It is that neighborhood is, it's rough. So anyway, if Portland is in the same situation and that's where I ultimately want to end up, then all of these shows that I'm trying to fill in, like I took on Park City, and then I'm going to go to Sun Valley, and then I want to end up in Portland. But let's say Portland falls and I've got these other ones that are getting me out there that really affects my entire tour.
We always try to cull together that kind of road trip that makes sense. You know, 6 to 8 hours apart seems to be a really nice thing if you can work those. And I can't see going, you know, I was talking to somebody that was thinking about Pearl into Reston, Virginia. Like they're really literally going to go coast to coast. I'm like, well, we've done the Cannonball Run from the Pearl to St. Louis before. Might as well. I'm like, that's a different one. St. Louis is halfway across.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but we're going to do what we have to do. But the Cannonball Run between either Sausalito and Pearl to set up time in St. Louis is always a, kind of a badge of honor and always a fun one if you can put those two shows together.
Yeah. Well, this Labor Day weekend this year, it's going to be nuts. We've got now Cherry Creek moved to Labor Day. Sausalito is coming back now. Pearl, Long's Park. Are there even going to be enough of us out there to staff all these shows?
Well, we've talked to some people that they think there are endless supply of artists, and it'll be interesting to see quality. Well, you know, and it can hurt the shows. Unfortunately, it's a little short-sighted. If they're like, well, there are endless artists to fill these. What if your show becomes filled with artists that aren't necessarily the top tier anymore? And then all of a sudden the clientele starts to think, well, you know, this show wasn't as good this year because we didn't see X, Y, and Z. So if their favorite artists aren't there, they may not come back the next year. So it could send shows down. I don't like the idea of putting that many festivals on the same weekend, not just because I can't do them, but because I worry about the quality. Sausalito has needed a kick in the ass for a long time. It tried to get back going, but I don't feel like they listened to the high quality director that they hired. I felt like they got pretty cocky and wanted to stick with their old model. So it needs a shot in the arm. I wish them luck. We need good festivals and a multitude of them. So I wish them luck. I won't be there. But
speaking of Sausalito, what a fortunate thing for us that Cindy Lyric has joined the NAIA board. Her and Evan Reinheimer, new additions this month. So it was kind of a great interaction with her this past meeting, and she's sharing all about the challenges that, not just the challenges that us artists are going through, but she's going to be able to share with NAIA the challenges that these show directors are experiencing, trying to produce the shows coming back from this long break and in this current economic situation.
It's true. I kind of wanted to just keep the wool over my eyes, to be honest, when she started talking. And I'm like, no, I don't want to hear about it. I just want to go to do the show and make my money. Like, you guys handle your end. I'll handle my end. Like, right. I won't tell you about the clogged drain in my bathroom if you don't tell me about the fact that you're worried about your funding. It's just, it's really hard to know how difficult things have been for every aspect of our business.
Your interview with Stephen King coming up here, where he talks about all of the challenges he's been going through with launching Des Moines, and he has really been balancing the challenges to his shareholders, to his sponsors, but then also wanting to have a place for artists and to have this show happen and to have it be something that is successful for everyone involved.
He's been my big hope, honestly. I feel like if one of these big shows can happen, and it can happen successfully and can happen safely, then they can show some of these other ones the way to go. And I think that he takes that as a thing of pride. You know, he's always wanted to be a leader. He's got a hell of a lot of ego. He wants to have one of the best shows in the country. And he does have one of the best shows, but he's trying to do it in Des Moines. You know, Des Moines is not the easiest, most artistic town in the world. And he's pulled that rabbit out of the hat year after year. So
Iowa is my home state. I understand Iowa. That's where I'm from. So I understand Des Moines.
And I love that festival. And I don't know, I'm really excited for everyone to hear what he has to say.
Well, I think we should probably get to it then, don't you, Will?
Absolutely, let's do it.
All right, well, coming up next, we have Will's interview with Executive Director of the Des Moines Arts Festival, Stephen King.
The Independent Artist Podcast welcomes Stephen King. Stephen is the Executive Director of the Des Moines Arts Festival in Des Moines, Iowa. Throughout his career in festivals and events, projects have garnered more than 300 industry awards from the likes of the International Festival and Events Association, Texas Festivals and Events Association, and the International Downtown Association. King currently serves on the International Festivals and Events Association, IFEA, World Board of Directors, an organization he chaired in 2017. He also serves on the IFEA World President's Council and Bravo Greater Des Moines Board of Directors. He is a past board member of the National Association of Independent Artists and is a founding member of Zapplication. That is the official bio, but I wanted to invite you on the podcast because you've always been a champion of the arts and of artists. You've been the director of NAIA, so you know what we do and are trying to do. Stephen, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule for this. I know you have a lot going on to try to get the show up and running. But my favorite part when I texted you and asked you if you were willing to do this was, let's get back to work.
Yeah, can we please?
Oh my God, so ready.
Please, yeah, I think we're all ready.
Yeah, we're definitely ready. You did not emerge fully formed from the art show clamshell. So how did you get your start?
In the art fair business, it's funny, probably in a phrase, other duties as assigned. I can remember organizing events, gosh, as early as junior high, right? Just wasn't, it wasn't really until I was teaching in Houston very early in my career where I was also running special events while I was teaching, but, you know, I had my summers off. So I spent a few summers in Canton, Maine as the director of special events for Camp Wikila.
Oh, wow.
Look that one up. when I went to grad school in New Mexico, I started producing concerts at the arena and at the football field, and I was working for their special events department while I was there. And I was also managing the Southwest High School Theater and Dance Festival. So I was beginning to find out, wow, I can make a living doing this. So right when I finished grad school, my wife and I moved to Fort Worth. You know, we're originally from Texas. Yep. And we moved to Fort Worth, and I got what would essentially be a intern position with Main Street Fort Worth Arts Festival. And started working there. And gosh, you know, the rest is history. I left there as the director, and, you know, I've been in the industry ever since. It's like 26 years ago, because my daughter's 26, Madeline's 26, so that'd be 26 years ago. So, I mean, my degrees are in theater. I have a master's degree in directing. And so this is not really too far off what I do.
No, it really isn't. You know? Did you leave kind of some of the same people that you worked with? Are they still there at Fort Worth?
I think so. You know, they haven't had a show in a couple of years now. So,
I know.
Yeah, they've actually dissolved the festival for the last 2 years. So I don't know what they're going to do, to be honest with you. I don't know enough about what's happening there. But Jay Downey hired me, right, at Main Street. And he was back a couple of years ago. So he was doing the festival up until, you know, the time that COVID took over.
Right. Yeah, our last email was from him directly. So yeah. I think he's still in charge. Hey, I wanted to have you on here. You've always been kind of a champion for the arts and for the art show industry. You've always been very vocal and a kind of a leader in our world. And so I kind of had the impression last year that if people would just shut up and let you work, you had a plan and you could have shown us the way. You know, it's like just let Steven show us how you can do a show. And I just had the feeling it may have been too early last year, but just wanted to kind of find out what your plan was, figure out what derailed it, and kind of hear on your end how things went.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's very, you're very generous, very kind. You know, of course, we had a plan to execute the festival. I mean, I think we were probably one of the last festivals to cancel. And we did it at what we would consider to be really the very last minute. I think like many of us, you know, we certainly didn't realize the horrors of the pandemic and very early on. So we had a full intent of executing. We had a lot of different ideas about what we could do and how we could do it. Obviously, we had, you know, I worked with a committee off of my board, along with a few other people here in the community, brainstorming check-ins. You know, we created a new timeline, but we knew pretty early on. So, you know, everything really kind of started in March. So we knew pretty early on that we had to make a decision at a certain date. And our date, we ended up with our drop date being May 15th. Now, I realized that there were several other events that were happening that pulled the trigger a lot sooner than that. And I understand why, but our drop date was just based on our contracts, right? We have huge contracts. This is a $1.2 million deal we've got going on here. So there's a lot of money that has to be invested. And around the middle of May, we determined May 15th, 6 weeks out from the festival, was the time that we had to commit to some of our larger contracts. So if we pull the trigger, we're committed to, you know, several six-figure contracts. And so we needed to make a decision. And quite frankly, at that time, the city had not made a decision, had not come out with any kind of proclamation or decision about gatherings and about people gathering. Those are the things that we were hearing on a national level, right? Right. About all these different things. And so we literally had an executive committee meeting of our board, and I got out of that meeting and called the mayor on his cell phone. Oof. And said, you know, it's like May 13th. I need a decision because I'm about to have to commit several hundred thousand dollars. And, you know, you coming out with a proclamation on June 15th is not going to do it for me. You know, you're talking about not just us, but you're talking about, you know, all the artists that have to travel from across the country and for them to make plans and hotels and all these other kinds of things. And I think those are you know, that's part of the glass half full story of this, is that I think everybody around the country, the partners that we have to work with, they're learning a whole lot more about our industry and about what it takes and the commitment, that it's not just about us and sitting at our laptop, but it's about you and it's about the artists that are traveling from show to show to show to show. It's about, you know, the men and women who put up tents, who sell beverages, who do all the kinds of things that it takes to execute a festival. So those are the kinds of things that I know that they are learning as well, which is really terrific. But to answer your question directly, the one thing that tripped us up was that we weren't going to get a street permit.
Right.
There's not a single place in the country. I mean, well, I take that back. There's probably some private property types of events
sure.
that don't require the street permit. They certainly have to get past the proclamation for gatherings for the number of people. But for us, we have to close two main streets, and the not receiving the permit is what ultimately derailed us.
Okay. I mean, those are huge, huge streets in Des Moines that
right.
you're closing down. It's major thoroughfares.
Major thoroughfares, so, yeah.
Do you think, does Des Moines Art Festival have a liability if somebody gets COVID? I mean, do you have insurance against that now?
Yeah, that's a really good question that we're all still trying to answer. Here's okay. the deal. It's like, I think it's a lot like, there are some other things, but you know, if I want to get into the mud about it, any attorney will tell you, you have to prove it.
Right.
So if you come to an event, or you know, you go to the grocery store, or you go to a concert, or you get gas, you know, whatever it is. And you say, you know, you turn around and you sue that gas station because I got COVID at your gas station because I walked inside and there were three people that weren't wearing masks. Well, you've got to prove it. You've got to be able to prove
right.
that is where you got it. So I think the jury is still out on whether or not we could be held liable, but it's I hate to say it this way, but it's a lot like any kind of liquor related law is that if somebody really wants to sue, they're just going to throw a net over everybody. So, and everything, and sort of pull that
right.
net back, and whoever's left over are the folks that are going to have to pay the price. But I'd say at this point, I think the jury says no.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of in the same place. I mean, it kind of seems like if we're willing to take the risk, you're willing to take the risk, the public is willing to take the risk mm-hmm. and come out and see us, we should be able to get to work. And that's my hope anyway.
Yeah. It's also about communication. You know, if we tell folks you got to wear a mask and you've
right.
got to, you know, these kinds of things have to be put in place, then they have some responsibility in that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure you have mask replacements if we're artists and it's 117 heat index like it was last time. But God, what I wouldn't give for that heat index again, I just want to work, like
yeah,
you said,
you know? Right.
So are your farmers markets back up and running? You've got a pretty major one there in Des Moines.
We have a huge
that?
One, and it's opening the first weekend of May.
Okay.
They have said that it's going to be half capacity. They have put some things in place, like they're not serving food, like open container food or drinks, things like that. But yeah.
What does that do to our beer tent there at the DMAF?
Nothing.
That's got to be
by the
a huge.
End of June, Will, nothing. No, I would say if anything, it is, you know, instead of serving a draft, we would go to cans. And as you know, some of your favorite, you know, microbrews here in Des Moines are served up in cans anyway, if we want to go
absolutely.
That yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, it sounds like we're pretty good. Are we looking good for the festival this year?
We are looking good. Now, the mayor's proclamation is still in place. We are more than hopeful that that proclamation is going to change. Things seem to be, or were, skewing in the right direction. For those of us that have been following it, we've been following the RT factor, which is the rate of transmission factor. And everybody
right.
in the country wants that to be below 1%. And it has been trending below 1% for quite a few weeks now. So that is something that we're certainly watching. We anticipate that the proclamation will change sooner than later, especially with the market going. at the beginning of May, and also with the governor's decision that I think, what is today? So April 3rd, I believe, April 3rd or 4th, the vaccines will be available to anyone over the age of 18. So here in the state of Iowa. So that's really, really fantastic.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, we're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, you really are. Less than 1% is fantastic. Hey, I wanted to ask you, what does the current show look like? Does it look different? Is the footprint different?
That's a good question. You can imagine that over the last 10 months, we have been coming up with plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, you know, as it goes on and on and on. And certainly one of the things that we looked at was changing locations, was going to a different location so that we could spread out more. As you're well aware, we're in a pretty compact space in an urban downtown. And then we determined that, first of all, there was really no good fall date. I mean, everybody that's having something right now in March, April, May is moving to the fall. So there really isn't a fall date.
I have 12 shows in September.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Let me know if I can be your proxy somewhere. That might be kind of fun.
It would be.
Wow, would that really mess with the rules? No, mess with some people.
We're going to edit that.
Edit that out. Who, me? So ultimately, we landed on the fact that we did not want to move. We did not want to move the location because the sculpture park and what we have there is just so special. So we've decided to stay there. Now, one of the things that we are doing is, as you know, artists that were accepted, invited to be a part of the show in 2020 were rolled over to 2021. Right. We did, as a result of the jury for 2020, have a wait list. One of our objectives right now is that we will not fill any space that has been left open. So at this juncture, we've had, I think, about 15 artists that have not accepted our invitation. I'd say 98% of those are COVID related. Right. They're just not ready to get back out there. And we're not going to fill those spaces. So what we're going for is an opportunity to spread the booths out just a little bit more throughout the festival site. We'll still have food courts. The food courts will do the same thing. We'll spread them out even more than they already are. We are also talking about extending the hours in the morning. So starting earlier in the morning, that way we can have people, you know, if you're going to have 20,000 people on the site in a day, can they be there for, I don't know how to explain this. So that can they be there for, you know, spread them out over 10 hours versus spread them out over 6 hours,
right?
More people there, or you can have the same amount of people there taking up less space. So we're doing things like that, but I think the site itself will look pretty much the same, except likely food courts really is probably the biggest thing you'll see, because they'll be more spread out. They'll be in different places.
Okay. Are these your ideas, or is the city coming down and telling you, hey, can you do this and that, or just an idea of personal safety and safety for your patrons?
No, I think when you say our ideas, I would say they are ideas just based on the last 10 months of trying to think this through, talking to peers, working with peers. You can bet that just about every meeting we're having, we've been talking about these kinds of things. We have we call it our support group here in town of about 25 festival and event directors that we get together about once a month. And we've gotten together a little bit more than that this past 10 months, just to kind of talk things through and kind of see where everybody is. And so I think it's a collective kind of thing of just listening and executing on those ideas and things that we think that would work best for the space. The city definitely has come to everybody with some, you know, sort of the high level 40,000 foot view kinds of things. We want masks. Mm-hmm. We want sanitation. We want we social distancing. We prefer one-way traffic, you know, those kinds of things. I don't think we'll have the traffic by the end of June. Let me just say this. Right now, our COVID protocol document's about 9 pages long, single spaced.
Sure.
Okay. We hope by the end of June that is a 2-page document, double spaced. I mean,
okay.
That's the way we're kind of looking at it. We are throwing everything at the wall right now because we really want to have an event. And if that's what it takes to put on an event, then by golly, we're going to do it. We think we're going to be in a really good place by the end of June, which is still, what, April, May, you know, 3 months. We're still 3 months away. So a lot of time.
It's really nice to hear you say that. It's nice to know a lot of us are going to be vaccinated, and a lot of people will probably stay away if they are not. You know, a lot of people don't care. I can look at Florida and think that those shows might happen. I can look at Texas and be more hopeful, but they just cut a show in Texas that's the same weekend as opening day of the Texas Rangers, and they expect full capacity, 48,000 people. So, you know, what are, you know, who is leading the event? What do we care about versus, you know, is it sports or is it art? Is it
dollar signs? Dollar signs.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think we've kind of covered COVID. I kind of wanted to talk to you about some other things that are just kind of fun topics and just pick your brain as a show director too.
Yeah.
One of the things that NAIA has tried to do over the years is bridge that gap between artists and show directors. Make it not, you're not the boss necessarily.
Right.
You're not the enemy. You're just, you're a guy working. You're on our side. So a lot is made about how much we spend as artists on art shows. Jury fees have doubled in the last few years. Booth fees get more and more expensive for some of the bigger shows. How important are jury fees to your festival? How important are booth fees to your show? Is it kind of a kickstart, or is it, does it barely pay the trash bill?
Well, that's an interesting way to ask the question. How important are the fees?
So fees
in general from artists cover, at least for us, they cover probably about 8% of our total budget. Mm-hmm. And I would say the application fees are pretty much a wash when you include the cost of the jury process. It's a wash. So, you know, you've got your, we pay zap fees too. We pay projection
fees. Probably more than
we
do.
Yeah.
Right.
We pay a per application fee. We pay, if you're a projection jury, you're paying fees for that. If you want to use the application module, you know, you're paying fees for that. We bring in 5 jurors, we pay our jurors. So by the time it's all said and done, we've pretty much used every dime that's available to us. And then you've got to, you know, from our perspective, there's also with the application process, marketing and advertising of that. I know artists will say that's, you know, that shouldn't be our burden. And we try not to make it your burden. We still keep our application fees pretty low. And you know, I'm going to advocate for us. But, you know, we've tried several things over the last few years that frankly, I wish other shows would do as well. But, you know, like the first 24 hours, you know, you can apply for half price at our show.
Right.
Quite frankly, that started because, and I mean this in the kindest possible way, but seriously, we were getting 80% of our applications in the last 24 hours that, you know, that the application was available. So it was killing us on the staff side of things. It was just killing us.
That does not surprise me. Yeah. I mean, we are our own bosses and, yeah, I've certainly turned them. I've been in part of that 80% for sure.
Because you know, if you're a zap show, if you're a projection show, they've got to burn the show. They've got to get it ready. So that's part of it. We a lot of shows don't review every single application. We do.
Right.
We take the time to do that. So that's part of what you're paying for too. You're paying for us to review your application, make sure it's a good application for the jury, and to put it up in front of the jury. So that's a big piece of it. Now, the booth fees, you know, booth fees, expenditures on that side, you're talking about security and power and marketing and PR and, you know, the fees and permits to close the streets and, you know, those kinds of things that are really expensive. have gotten more and more expensive for the show. I mean, I don't know how many people know it, but you know, our little show in Des Moines, it's like I said earlier, it's about a $1.2 million budget.
That's huge. And yeah. I mean, you're paying for music and you're paying for closing the street and you're paying for security, and you have a pretty big volunteer basis too.
We do. Correct? We have a huge, very dedicated volunteer base. We're really fortunate in that. Yeah, Daphne and I are the only two full-time people that work on this festival, along
That's
with
amazing.
everything else that we do within our organization. And we have some contractors that work with us, seasonal contractors, and thank goodness sure. for the, you know, for intern programs, because we do utilize them a lot too.
You have an incredible staff, your volunteers.
Yeah,
I'll just give a little shout out to Brian Driesman and Sean Masters, because they've been on my street for every year I've done that show. So
yeah.
It really becomes kind of like a family there. It's really nice. And it kind of seems, it's funny, you must have cultivated that in Fort Worth, because it's a similar thing. It's like the guys that run the Black Captains there. I don't know if you started that program, but it's a similar thing where the Black Captains are the same, and they tend to know their artists, and they come in, and you know,
right.
Brian came in and asked me about my daughter, and I mean, it's really nice.
It's about, you know, it's about developing that personal relationship. I just, you know, I'm a firm believer that this is a partnership. This is not, as you said earlier, we're not, as Carol used to say, you know, we're not the dragons. We really are trying to be partners in this. We realize that we're here for you and you are here for us. We want to do the best that we can to provide you with an audience, a buying audience. Yeah, there's everybody else who doesn't come for the art, but there's always the opportunity to tap those people as well and make them new buyers, right? So I think sometimes some shows do get a bad rap. Sometimes we get a bad rap because we do offer other things other than just artists. But we kind of come at it from a different perspective. We are trying to appeal to those people as well to become new buyers. I always use the analogy that we're all going to run out of wall space someday. So Will is going to run out of wall space if he just pays attention to the same buyers every single year. We
Right.
have to cultivate new buyers for you. We have to recruit new buyers for you. And that means getting them to the festival, getting them in front of your booth. It's up to you to sell your work. It's up to you to pitch your work and for it to be out there. It's our job to get them there. So if we can do that by any means necessary, that's what we need to do. I think of it as, you know, kind of a comparison to a gallery, you know, in terms of your booth fee too. If you know, you work with a gallery, you're going to give the gallery whatever your percentage is, for 50%, 30%. How many people are going to walk in front of your work if it's at a gallery? Now take that
Right.
same idea, okay? And if you're going to give the gallery that amount of money, that X number of dollars, compare that on a per head basis of the number of people that walk by your gallery on the street somewhere, anywhere in the country, right? It's exponential in terms of the opportunity that's available to all the different artists. And so I really think that that is something that show directors in general try very hard to do. We don't always get it right, but we're certainly trying hard to do it.
Well, that's the difference too between a personal event like you're throwing in Des Moines. It's Des Moines' big art buying, art show off event of the year, and it's a huge community event. So the folks that you have that are volunteering every year, if you can get them happy, keep them happy, they're bringing their families by. They might be bringing their rich uncle by. They might be rich themselves at some point, ready to buy from you.
Yeah.
That's what you guys have. That's what some of the bigger, you know, or event-based, like small town or big city event, if it's a personal thing, you have that. Whereas sometimes the big promoters, you know, they don't have that necessarily. They don't have that person. They're just Barnum and Bailey going into this town and to the next town. You know, and it's fine. And it's a total, it's a different feel. And that, you know, it's a feather in our cap if we want to do it. It's a tool in our toolbox, you know. Those particular shows, but it never has that personal feel. So those are always appreciated.
We're going to take a quick break and listen to some clips from next week's episode, where I sit down with artist Carol Swayze.
Let's face it, you know, part of the reason we're out there traveling and doing shows is because it's fun.
Right.
We spend all our time creating art in our studios by ourselves. You know, by the weekend, we're just desperate to talk to somebody. I always joke about it. You can't go drinking in that band because everybody can find you. Don't put the porta potties in the hot sun.
Yeah. You
know, don't take the garbage till we're gone. And I let her babble on for a few minutes. And finally I said, what about me?
She knew you might say no.
Yeah, probably. I wrote an article once called The Dragon, where I discussed the fallacy that show directors are like a dragon, that they're breathing fire and you should be afraid of them. If that were true, I would not ever get in a show because trust me, I have ruffled some feathers.
Hey, I do want to move on. I feel like important social issues came up in 2020 that our art show industry, either we dodged a bullet and we didn't have to deal with them face on, or we didn't really get to be a part of them, depending on how you look at it. But the way I see like Black Lives Matter affecting our industry is that we need to be more inclusive. And my big kind of question with this is, how do you increase inclusivity in an industry that relies so heavily on a blind jury?
Yeah, that's another really good question, Will. We actually have been talking a lot about that question over the last year and a half. When we finished our last strategic plan in 2018, it'd be one of our strategic priorities coming out of that strategic plan was to be more inclusive, was to really tackle this inclusivity challenge with that in mind. And it has been a part of a great many conversations. And what we have found is this: what we need to do is a better job of outreach. So while we might carpet bomb on social media and other places about the application process, for example, we need to be more laser focused and strategic about identifying the opportunity to underserved communities. Right, we need to get into the community. We need to be vocal about what we have to offer, and I think it's also not just in the art fair industry, but it also happens within other programs that we produce. So just like the audience that I was talking about, it also comes through those community outreach programs. So that if we can get other nonprofit organizations engaged and involved in the festival, they then come and attend the festival and they see themselves as part of the festival. They see themselves as part of our community. And then, you know, they tell two friends and they tell two friends. So they come, they leave the festival with this experience that they've just had, and they can share out that experience to other people. And it becomes far more things like our festival become far more accessible. We do not live in a diverse state. We do not live in a diverse county. It is very, very difficult here in Polk County. I believe we are at about 92%, 93% white. So it's challenging to the first challenge that I experienced was just trying to find the conduit. How do I get to those organizations? How do I get to those artists? And that's just in my community. So I think we have to do, as an industry, I think we have to do a better job of understanding where the organizations are that are out there in the country that can assist us with the communications and letting them know about the opportunity, right? I think there's other ways that we can engage our local audiences. I'm not speaking just for Des Moines, but I think everybody, that it may not necessarily at first have to do with a jury or the blind jury, but there certainly are opportunities to feature, you know, an art exhibition or to work with an organization if they want to bring in a Black artist or a Hispanic artist and do a special exhibition or something like that. Because that then, again, allows that that community to see themselves as part of the festival. Right now, they don't see themselves there. They don't see themselves engaged in the community.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're not in Atlanta, you know. You can't reach out and bring a whole other market that doesn't necessarily exist in Des Moines. But Yeah. You know, I mean, the other thing that I was thinking about too is just what's popped up recently, and this may exist more in not necessarily making your community feel better, but making your artists feel better, because there are a lot of Asian artists. So the Asian hate that's popped up, yeah, again, it's been pretty shocking. And I mean, I don't know what we as artists can do other than just let them know, like, you know, let our friends know, hey, I'm right over here. If you run into a problem, I can bring my 6'3 white privilege over and help you out.
Yeah,
I mean, what do we do as human beings to kind of make our friends feel better?
Yeah, I think that's a great place to be, though. I think that, you know, we recently had this conversation with a group of artists, and just making sure that people feel welcome and making sure that people feel like they have a safe space around you or with you, and that can have that conversation with you and rely upon you. And I think we have to be, you know, ultra aware right now of even microaggressions, of things that we're seeing and experiencing that are around us. And we have to not be afraid to push pause and to say stop, or to intervene, or to, you know, engage in a conversation that you see that may not be going. In other words, what I'm trying to say is, don't wait to be asked. If you need to inject yourself. Everybody can do it. You don't have to do it in a, you know, as you say, the 6'3", you know, white privilege kind of way. You can do it in a very, in some ways that are not as obvious to everyone as they might be to you and the person that you're trying to help out. But I think, you know, not saying something is more dangerous than saying something, right? Because we want to be able to, we want to be able to provide that safe space. And somebody wants to know that. They want to know that you're there for them. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a really great point. Hey, you were talking about our community outreach in your last point, but this may be a completely different podcast or a whole new can of worms, but tell me about Artist Inc., something new that you started last year and hope to get going. But I mean, hopefully just the extra time has given you a chance to build even a bigger thing.
Yeah. So Artist Inc. was, again, result of our 2018 strategic plan, where the board wanted to go in a direction of being more of an art service organization and really providing some services for individual artists. We have a tremendous support system here in the Des Moines region for arts organizations, but support for individual artists is lacking tremendously.
Okay.
So after we developed our strategic plan, we actually partnered with Bravo Greater Des Moines, which is a funding mechanism here in Des Moines. And we hired Chris Dahlquist, our friend Chris Dahlquist out of Kansas City.
Oh, man.
To come.
You don't get better than Chris Dahlquist.
No. You're right.
Yeah. She's probably too busy to even talk to us here. Yeah. I don't know. We'll try. We'll try. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. Just so fortunate and blessed to be, to have her, call her a friend. And, you know, she came to Des Moines. She talked to over 325 artists here in the Des Moines area. And she delivered a report to us and to Bravo about kinds of things that we could be doing to help create that space here in Des Moines for artists. And one of her primary recommendations was Artist Inc. So Artist Inc. is a program that already exists in Kansas City. It's got a 10-year history in Kansas City. It is essentially a professional development program for artists, individual artists, teaching them the business skills that they need to be successful people, to be successful humans, and to really move their practice to more of an individual, as an individual artist.
Okay, so this is a much bigger program than just a new artist program that you'd see on the street, like at the show, like the new art section. Be like the emerging artists section
this
is what I mean.
Right, this is pretty big. I mean, it's been, I think it's, I want to say it's been around for at least 10 years, and it's in the region So it's been in Kansas. It's been in Kansas. It's in Missouri. It's in Arkansas. It's in Texas. So there are several Artist Inc. cohorts in the Midwest. So Mid-America Arts Alliance actually owns Artist Inc. And while we are not in the Mid-America Arts Alliance region, we did go and ask permission, and we are actually the first community outside the Mid-America region to offer Artist Inc. in our community.
Wow.
But so we just think providing that leadership and that training to individual artists, and what better time to do it? I mean, if I only had one wish, I would have done it, you know, a year ago, right? Because as soon as COVID hit, everybody was scrambling about new pockets of money, new ways of doing business, you know.
Absolutely.
Web presence, online sales presence. How do I do this in a world? How do I make a living in a world in which I don't have, you know, 36 shows on the weekends? How do I do this? That is really something that Artist Inc. is here to teach. Artists of all disciplines, too. I think that's an important caveat. It's for visual artists, performing artists, musicians, everybody.
But just Iowans or?
Central Iowa, right. Central Iowa, yeah. I mean, if we were in a normal year, we'd be meeting in person. So there is sort of a radius in which you have to be willing to drive to and be a part of the cohort.
Of course.
But because of COVID, we are doing it via Zoom.
Yep. Yeah. COVID kills everything fun.
Everything fun. Not for long, Will. Not for long.
Let's get back to work. Hey, is that crew, your Artist Inc. crew, are they going to be, are they going to have a presence at DMAF?
They are not. No.
Okay.
It is, no.
Totally separate.
It is separate. It's completely separate. And again, you know, it's part of our organization's effort to be more of an art service organization. This is one of the first steps that we're taking. Several more to come.
Yeah, very nice. Hey, I know you're busy. We're kind of winding it down, but I did want to ask you, in your bio, you and your team have won over 300 industry awards. And I wanted to ask you, this is kind of a two-part question. What awards are you most proud of? And why is it the 2013 Best Poster? Why are you so proud of that?
You know, the 2013 commemorative poster of the Des Moines Arts Festival, I think it was called DMAF Detour. It's by this really incredible artist.
I haven't had my ego stroked in a long time. I've had the year off, Stephen. I need, you know, we artists have needs.
It actually does sit center stage in the office where we office. It's like right there on the, you can see it from the street. That's how... Yeah, it's right there.
that's what I needed. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talked a little bit about relationships with artists and your relationship with your volunteer family. But I feel like some artists do have kind of an unnecessarily contentious relationship with show directors. So how do you deal with that without getting bitter? I mean, I'm sure you have to deal with some challenging personalities on the street. Like, how do you do that without getting just hating artists in general?
Am I bitter? Are you?
No. I'm saying you're not. No. No.
Give me a few minutes. Just give me, no.
All right. You're like, well, who are we talking about?
Yeah. You know, Will, I got to say, one of my favorite things and one of the reasons I'm still in this business is Thursday. I love load in. It's like a big family reunion, isn't it? I mean, you guys get to experience it every single week. I get it once a year. It's just, and it is for some of the people that I see, I've known them for every year I've been involved in the art fair industry from way back in Fort Worth, right? So I really enjoy that part. There's a few bad apples in the group. There always will be. There'll always be some folks who will, especially post jury. And I do have a file. Yes, I do. My wall of shame, I'll say, of just, you know, 2 a.m. Drunken rants that I receive via email about, you know, why didn't I accept them into the show? And That's hard. That part's hard because a lot of times we do take that personally. I know we shouldn't because we have a jury right. and somebody else selects the work. Then that's really true. Really is true. Some of my favorite artists who I've got work here in my house have not always been in the show.
Right.
So we sometimes, I know I do, and some of my fellow directors, we do take that personally, and we do try to work on how we can better communicate things and how we can, but you're just not going to get away from it, right? If you've got 1,100 artists, 1,200 artists applying for the show, and you've only got 150 spaces, some people are going to be angry at you.
Right.
And we understand that. We understand that a rejection email means that they have to rethink mortgage or a car payment or, all of those different things. And we understand and we appreciate that. So I guess to answer your question, I take it, I take it in. I know when it's going to happen. It's going to happen post-jury. There's a reason why we issue acceptance and regret letters on Friday afternoon at 5:00.
I was going to ask you about that because that is so common. I mean, there's a week right there, where everybody's kind of like at the end of the day. And it's like, I can kind of see, are you guys just sitting there with your finger on the,
pretty
like,
much.
Oh,
and we turn our computers off as soon as we hit the enter button.
that really answers a big question for me because we have always wondered that. And I always feel like you should be able to have maybe the announcement should be made like Oscars style, and there should be like the loser's lounge and we're over there. We're like, oh, I can't believe I didn't get into this. And go over there and drown your sorrows with your friends instead of making the drunken emails. Is there anything else that you as a director wish that we as artists knew about your job?
How much time do you have?
That's on you.
That's on me. Yeah. I think for the most part, most artists do know about our jobs, whether or not they, depending on the time and the space, whether or not, they want to be empathetic with that, I think is part of your last question. I think for the most part, we're doing the best we can. We're in this industry because we love this industry. We all feel almost said maybe not all, but I'll say I feel very, very fortunate to be able to work in an industry that I love and work with people that I admire and appreciate for their craftsmanship. I could never do what you guys do. I love to see, Daphne and myself, we've talked about it on numerous occasions. Just being able to walk down the street and see the smiles on people's faces and see the interactions between artists and the people that live here, it's just, it just brings us incredible, incredible joy. I'm very engaged at the International Festivals and Events Association. I've been on the board. I've chaired the board before. And it's one of my, that too is one of my great joys because those are my people, right? They bring joy throughout the world. Some of them do art fairs and some of them do fireworks shows and some of them do, the Indianapolis 500 and some of them do, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade and all of those things bring us great joy. And they build community and they bring people together for that incredibly tasting craft beer. So I'm grateful for that. And I hope artists know that for every crack they see in the asphalt, we've already called the city to complain about it ourselves. We're constantly trying to work through whatever is going to make your experience a better experience. We don't want you to have a bad time. Why would we want that?
Right.
So right there, that's a big thing. It's like sometimes when, artists lead with that, that is our, you know, our primary goal is to ensure that you have a miserable experience is just beyond me. I just don't get it. I mean, yes, that's okay. I woke up this morning. I'm just going to be, you know, just a jerk all day.
We're going to, that's right. We're going to put this son of a bitch next to the kettle corn. Yeah, have a good time.
Right. And we're, so, yeah, I mean, I think we can't control the weather as hard as we try. We can't control the weather. We can control, you know, there's some things that we can do and control, but that's not one of them. And we can't really control the number of people that are going to be there. I think it's funny sometimes, Will, that and I wish to goodness I could remember who it was, but and I actually I think you were on the Facebook post chain. A couple of years ago, we had Eddie Money on the main stage.
Yeah.
And somebody was complaining about music at a festival. And somebody chimed in and said, well, I was in Des Moines this weekend and Eddie Money was on the main stage and I didn't even get one ticket to Paradise. So, I mean, we just like busted out. Here, right? I mean, I shared that comment with everybody because what I want you to know is that as soon as Eddie Money came on stage, we're on the radio, we're on our phones, turn it down, turn it, nope, you got to move the monitor to the left. So stage monitors are what bugs you. It's not the volume going out at the stage because we've got the stage pointed the other way. It's the monitors. Well, Eddie Money's an old guy. Well, he's a dead guy now, but he's an old guy. He could not hear.
Right.
So he's got the monitors turned up, right?
Absolutely.
So we have that issue on Saturday nights because we have older bands and so they can't quite hear. So we're literally on stage during songs tilting monitors just slightly. So if the monitor hits a different part of the building that's behind them and doesn't go down Locust Street or Grand Street, those things are happening all the time.
Your main stage, I mean, and that is what we as artists hear because your main stage faces away from us. So it's being broadcast away. So if you're not in music, you have to have those monitors so that they can hear and sing and play in tune and the band can hear.
Yep.
So that's what what we are hearing is the monitor. It's the wedge in front of the musician.
Right.
But I remember Aaron Neville, I was like, damn it. Could you turn him around? Could you because all I could hear was a just in the background. And I was like, that's all I get. It's just the high end, just that kind of, you've had a lot of music over the years. Do you have any announcements yet? When does that come out?
Probably in a, I don't know, 3 weeks.
Okay.
Three weeks, maybe.
We'll watch your website or Instagram or all of that good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all good. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I think that's the key. Well, I think we're not in the back room eating bonbons and spending your booth fees. We're out, you know, I think every director is out on the street just doing the best they can to fill potholes and turn music wedges and you know, dealing with security issues and, you know, all those kinds of things.
Or sweep the water off the street. Or sweep the water off the street. Somebody complaining about the fact that it had rained and there was water on the street. And we were kind of laughing about the fact that, like, dude, it just rained. You know, what do you want them to do? Yeah. And then you got Sean, like 20 minutes later, he's like shoveling, she's pushing the water off the street, dispersing it into the grass. So it's been... It's all right. Well, one last question I want to ask. We've been through a 2020 that we could not have done without the arts. Maybe that's proven to everybody how important, you know, music, TV, literature, books, movies, the paintings and photos on our walls and the jewelry on our hands that just make us more happy that while we're sitting around the house quarantined. What are some of your favorite things over the past year?
Some of my favorite things. Well, you're looking at one of them over my shoulder, if you can
see
it. That was one of my COVID purchase from a local artist, Chris Vance. You know Chris.
That's really nice.
Yeah, it's some of my favorite things over the last year. I think, you know, I've been spending a lot of time in my garage. I have a little wood shop in my garage. My grandfather was a woodmaker, a woodworker, and it's my stress relief. to go out there and build things. So I built a desk I'm sitting at.
Nice.
I built a coffee table, a new dining room table, a shelf in there. I've just kind of gotten into building some furniture here around the house. That's the thing I really enjoy doing. It really kind of takes my mind off of all the other things. Gives me an opportunity to work with my hands. And I can say, a couple weeks last month, there's First Fridays here. And our Mainframe Studios had a First Friday last month. And my daughter and my wife and I went. And we couldn't have been more happy to be out of the house at a function. I mean, it was crazy. It was amazing just to be out and see art
amazing.
And talk to artists and have that engagement. And yeah, it was really pretty spectacular. So
that's really nice. I feel like I hardly know how to talk to people anymore. So I appreciate you talking to me today. it's been a really, really strange year is an understatement.
Just can't imagine. I really want the event because it's just, I can't wait to see everybody. I can't wait to see you. And I hope we're all vaccinated up so we don't have a problem giving each other a big old bear hug and knowing that we haven't been able to see each other in so long. I'm really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Me too. They're having a hard time giving it away. I moved to New Mexico over the past year. So I'm actually in Santa Fe now.
Oh, wow. And, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I'm here and just a stone's throw away from Texas where they're having a hard time giving the vaccine away. So my wife and I are headed out on Thursday to try to put a couple shots in arms. We'll
Fantastic.
See what happens.
Fantastic. That's great.
Yeah.
Good news.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Stephen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Will.
Really appreciate your time, my friend.
Thank you. And we'll see you when?
You'll see me at the end
of June.
Yes,
you will. Yeah, you will.
Damn right.
We'll see you in Des Moines at the end of June.
I'll see you on the street. I can't wait to pull in. All right. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Stephen.
Well, that was great. I really enjoyed hearing you and Stephen talk.
You know, what I liked about it, Douglas, is that it kind of humanizes the other side of our business. Directors and artists sometimes find ourselves at odds, and I just don't think that needs to be the case. And I think with that interview, it definitely helps kind of see where he's coming from and how much hard work it is to pull off a show like that.
I'm actually completely and utterly shocked. Honestly, I mean, I'm not just saying this, that artists think to themselves, well, I'm going to shoot off an email saying, why didn't I get into this show? It's like...
You have to have an ego in order to do what we do for a living, Douglas, but
that's
a hell of a lot of ego.
That's going above and beyond, I
it
mean.
It is, yeah. As some people consider themselves a master of their craft, so I can't exactly see how you get the cockiness to pull that off. If I don't get into a show, I lick my wounds and...
And do better.
Move on.
Yeah, and say, okay, next time I'm going to put out a better application of work. But you know what I thought was something I really connected to with him was that he says in his spare time, during COVID, how he was working with wood, that's his outlet. And, it kind of was like, he's like us. He works with his hands. He's creative. He is expressing himself through materials. And it was like, he really does get us. He gets what we're doing and why we're doing it.
I think Stephen does get us, Douglas. And he wants us to succeed. He wants to succeed himself. And I said something earlier on as the lead in. He's got an ego about his show. And that's what makes it good. He wants to be the best, and I can understand that. And I appreciate that. I appreciate where he's coming from.
Yeah, it's the driving force to want to do good, to be better, to work harder,
It is. So. And, speaking of working better and reinventing yourself and working harder, you've got a killer interview coming up next week with Carol Swayze, who is a huge part of the NAIA. Carol has just been a great force. So I'm excited to hear that interview. It'll be entertaining for sure.
Well, I don't think it's going to surprise anybody when I say that she's going to tell me exactly what she's thinking.
She does at all times, anytime. So Carol's great. She's a lot of fun to have a drink with at the bar and talk music to. I've enjoyed her for many years.
Yeah. Well, everyone, we really appreciate you tuning in, and we encourage you to check out our Facebook page, the Independent Artist Podcast. and like it and add your comments. Let us know what you're thinking. We'd love to hear from you.
So join us on Facebook and join the conversation.
Will, great chatting with you again, and let's do this again next week, shall we?
Nice talking to you, Douglas. I'll see you next week.
All right. Bye, everyone.
This podcast has been brought to you by the National Association of Independent Artists. The website is naiaartists.org.
And while you're at it, check out Will's website at willarmstrongart.com and my website at sigworthglass.com.
And remember to subscribe to this podcast to be notified when we release new episodes.